Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
When you're hot, you're hot. And man, I am loving the heat and humidity to no end. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of July 13th and 14th. Really Jam Show coming up. Just a reminder now, deer season is rapidly approaching. It's in the Tom P calendar. It's already the first week in August. Deer management zones 45 and 46. We had Jody Powers on from Bureau of Wildlife Management a couple of weeks ago talking about this. Will be open for deer hunting during the 24 fall bow, youth archery, 6-day firearm, and youth firearm days only. All other deer seasons for 45 and 46 are closed until further notice. This is in response to reaction of Fish and Wildlife to the EHD outbreak down there for the past few years that really decimated the deer herds. So just keep that in mind. Also, Fish and Wildlife's Bureau of Wildlife Management have a wild turkey survey going on. Wild broods, you see them out there. It just make a note of it. Go to njfishandwildlife.com. The brood form is on there. Turkeys, as we know, in other states are taking a hit. Numbers are down. In Jersey, numbers are down. Not significantly yet, but just a matter of course. Was it about 3 weeks ago? Me and the lovely Dee Marie were out and about. And so easily identifiable hen. She had these certain markings on. We know exactly. We'd seen her a couple of times over the years. She had 6 or 7 poults with her. Beautiful. Look at that. Hey, man, they survived the coyotes. They survived the foxes. They survived the red-tailed hawks, the snakes, whatever, the possums. Saw the same turkey mama and one poult. Toot finoot, where'd the other ones go? So what is causing it? We have no idea. Well, that's obviously predation error. But again, go to njfishandwildlife.com and go to the turkey, go to the hunting link, then go to the turkey hunting link, and the survey will be there. Also, any questions, contact the Wild Turkey Project Leader, Jimmy Sloan, at james.sloan, S-L-O-A-N. Email him at dep.nj.gov. Coming up, man, we're talking snakeheads with Chris Smith from Bureau of Freshwater Fisheries. Whoa, man, these are a badass fish. And then we're going to have some Cape May history. Ernie Utz III there, Utz's Marina, down in the Cape. Grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Listen in, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
This is South Jersey's talk station, WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
We are here with Scott Spencer from Batteries Plus in Northfield and Mount Laurel, one of our industry aces. Scott, with summer weather finally coming fast, what should we do to make sure all our fun summer toys are ready for another year?
It's time to get your boat, ATV, motorcycle, golf cart, and jet ski batteries tested. Bring them in for a free evaluation. Typically, we can do it while you wait, so you'll have confidence in your go-fast toys when you need them most.
Now, besides batteries, I also understand you have a very good repair shop inside Batteries Plus. So if I happen to have a broken cell phone screen or tablet screen,
we fix it.
What if I need my cell phone battery replaced?
We fix it in minutes while you wait. If it's broken, bring it in. Charge ports, speakers, microphones, pretty much anything inside a phone, we fix it.
Thanks, Scott, for stopping by. Scott Spencer from Batteries Plus. You can visit them at 2 locations, 900 Tilton Road in Northfield and Route 73 in Mount Laurel. Find out more at batteriesplus.com.
And don't forget to stop in and register to win tickets to Journey and Def Leppard this summer in Philly.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
You're back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of July 13th and 14th. I know. And I'm getting heat all over the place about we're just concentrating on fluke, a.k.a. summer flounder fishing the past few weeks. It's hot, it's not, whatever. I want to spin something around here to the freshwater side. And we've been doing well with the largemouths, doing well with the crabs, it's fine, but it's just building them. You know, you check these sites and whatever. The northern snakehead fishery in the southern tier counties, you know, bordering Delaware Bay, the Rancocas Creek, whatever, these waterways in there, really taking off insofar as, one, they're spreading, like we know that, okay? They're an invasive species, supposed to be killed on con. Once you catch them, you don't let them go. You can kill them, you can eat them, whatever. But growing exponentially in angling popularity. Caught a few. These things fight like hell. They come through the top. We caught ours on rats. We didn't use frogs. No frogs were handy. But what a fish. But on the other hand, It's an invasive, a detrimental invasive. How much, we don't know. Earlier, a few years ago, when these things started to show up, there was a UN cry, they're going to destroy the largemouth bass fisheries in the respective waters, what have you. I don't know what's really come of it. In the Freshwater Digest, the 2024 Freshwater Digest on page 34, Aquatic Invasive Species Threatening New Jersey's Waterways by Christopher Smith. Chris is a fairly frequent guest on Rock and Fin Radio. He is a professional bass tournament angler, has over the years, former New Jersey Bass Angler of the Year several times. And he's a principal fisheries biologist, DEP Fish and Wildlife Bureau of Freshwater Fisheries. What an article. Now, me, for the, it's a great opportunity, great fish to catch. I'm gearing more to the flatheads, the catfish, you know, my proclivities, people, and the blue cats. Now we're getting into Delaware up there by Trenton. Big stuff happening. But back to the snakeheads, some of the feeder creeks, even up that far in Trenton, on the Pennsylvania side, there's a creek in there. Captain Dom Troisi, shout out, full draw bow fishing. That's where he goes, and he nailed the snakeheads, bow and arrow at night, totally legal. But the viability of the northern snakehead as a, okay, it's an invasive, but as a game fish, fight like hell, aggressive, great rod and reel, a great rod and reel quarry, and they taste pretty good. Now, the first one I had out of Newton Lake, Newtown, however they pronounce it, bang, wasn't too good. Yeah, it wasn't too good. But some of the other ones we've eaten, not bad at all. Hey, it's not yellow perch or walleye. On the other hand, it's still pretty good. I put a call into Chris. See if you can come on and talk about the northern snakehead, the spread a little bit. But again, as a professional bass angler, hardcore fisherman, the viability of this snakehead, and could it possibly receive, I don't know, maybe not game fish status, maybe have some, you know, state records for it, something to get. And you see people catching them and they're bragging about letting them go. That really sticks in my craw, because they're spreading quickly enough as it is. Have there been bucket stockings? No one knows. But the way they are spreading, Chris, I don't know, man. Hey, thanks for joining us. Sorry I get a little winded on that one, long-winded rather. But snakeheads, we know they're here to stay. But Chris, man, these things kick ass.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. You know, like always, thanks for having me on here, and happy to come on and talk about the snakehead today. They really are. They're an awesome fish. Like you said, you know, a number of times, they are an invasive. In New Jersey, we regulate them as a potentially dangerous fish. Mm-hmm. That's kind of our way of saying invasive. So when you are looking in the digest, you see the regulation, and, you know, and it doesn't necessarily say invasive. It says potentially dangerous fish. Right. We have 13 species in the state that we regulate like that, anywhere from the green sunfish to some of the invasive carp species, like the bighead carp, the silver carp you see down in, like, down south in the Tennessee River, yeah. Kentucky Lake. You know, those species are also on there. The round goby, which is popular, up on the Great Lakes, as a, everybody's kind of, saying how much the smallmouth bass fisheries have improved because of these round goby. So we've had threats, you know, here in New Jersey of, hey, why can't we bring some round gobies, you know, to our state? Well, obviously, like any invasive species, they're going to have a detrimental effect. So, mm-hmm. you know, definitely the moving around of those invasive species is highly prohibited. Please do not do it, all the anglers. Please do not, move those invasive species. Anytime you do encounter one, catch one, it's immediately do not release it, and you must kill it too. With that, the snakehead is definitely the big fish. They grow quickly. We see really good growth rates of them, where they're found, in some of the ponds. We've done some aging on them. Mm-hmm. They grow quick, and they're super aggressive.
Chris, the genesis of the northern snakehead, I did an article on it years ago from the information you forwarded me, which is great. Thank you. And other stuff I dug up from various states where they're found. But supposedly it was from some pond in Philly that the fish got out of. Somebody released them in a pond, I guess, Franklin, whatever, and got into the system. But Chris, the fecundity of the species, fecundity, however you pronounce it, these things mate like crazy and have billions of babies. The spread was something I've never seen. That was phenomenal. I mean, it had just boom, all of a sudden they're everywhere.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, it was 2008 is when we first found them within the Delaware River, within New Jersey. They started popping up. And it was about that time, too, that they first popped up in the Schuylkill River. As you mentioned, they were first originated from a pond. You know, we believe they were from a pond within FDR Park over in Philly. You know, from there, they kind of escaped and ended up into the Schuylkill. And you know, the rest is history. So, you know, over the last... you know, 16 years, they've really, you know, spread. And, you know, we kind of think of this as being a new thing, like, oh, snakeheads, they just popped up. I mean, we're really looking at since 2008, yeah. You know, that fish has been here and has been spreading, you know, and we continue to see the spread. We just documented just this past week another southern expansion of the range down into the Morris River. We just confirmed them. An angler reported one about a week ago, and we went out, did some electrofishing, and we confirmed them in that drainage too. So they're going to continue, you know, we don't know how far they're going to continue to spread, you know, after that, you know, whether they're going to get down into Cape May County or not. You know, originally a lot of the research said is that they were kind of like locked by salinity and that they didn't have a really high tolerance. But other states, you know, Maryland, Virginia, have shown, you know, within their Chesapeake Bay population that those fish just continue to crisscross the bay and they do have a very high tolerance for high salinity. So, that's why they're spreading.
I was just going to ask you that, Chris, too, because, again, like the blue catfish, path to hell is paved with good intentions. People, you know what I mean by that? With the stocking, the Maryland and Virginia, with the blue cats, you know, they figured the salt right. water would be a block to them, and now look at them, they're in the Delaware. But Chris, how the habitat, is it the snakehead habitat specific? Are there areas where, okay, the water's too cold or it's not weedy enough where they will have a natural barrier? For example, with the removal of dams. For example, the Muskinetkong, the Polensk go farther up north because they're being caught. I'm hearing reports, Chris, as far up, the snake is being caught as far up as like Rosemont, Bull's Island, and even further up the Delaware, up to almost up to Worthington. I don't know if the validity of those, you know, the veracity.
They're found through the whole, you know, the whole reach of the Delaware River, you know, within the New Jersey, you know.
Up and beyond the gap, huh? Whoa.
Oh, absolutely. And as you mentioned with dam removals and stuff, we've confirmed them within the pollen scale where we had a dam removal a couple years ago at Columbia Lake. They've entered into the pollen scale. A couple fish have been collected. So with those dam removals, this is a species that we acknowledge that is, you know, it's probably a here to stay species, mm-hmm. Unless some miracle occurs. We still have to weigh those, those consequences and options when we look at dam removals and in most cases increasing habitat and providing extra habitat to migratory anadromous fish like a river herring, a species that is at a historical low population right. levels, that absolutely removing dams and restoring habitat for that species is still beneficial, you know, regardless of whether we introduce maybe not all. In the case of the snakehead, we still continue to weigh those options when we're presented with those cases.
Well, Chris,
on a case-by-case basis.
We're speaking with Chris Smith, principal fisheries biologist, DEP's Fish and Wildlife Bureau of Freshwater Fisheries. Topic is the northern snakehead. Great, like better term, people, great game fish. Aggressive, fight well, predicated on the weather from pretty good eating. Well, Chris, I actually saw one caught verified in the, I guess it's the Raritan River drainage. I guess it came through the DNR Canal or something. The Millstone River there up by Griggstown, down through East Millstone.
Okay.
It was caught there. So imagine they got maybe kept through the canal system, the feeder canal. How else could it get there?
Yeah, and I actually personally, we haven't received, we never received that report. So that's actually a new report even to me.
Yeah.
So we pretty much... you know, think that most of the fish right now, we haven't received any reports outside of the Delaware River, even though there is a connection there. I mean, which there is a possibility definitely that they could get over to the Raritan. You know, hopefully that kind of, because of the canal system and, you know, the lop system, it does kind of keep it at bay, for a while. And really the, you know, keeping these fish out of extremely sensitive habitats, you know, North Jersey trout streams, South Jersey within the Pinelands. I mean, that's really our really main focus at this point at our, you know, at DEP is trying to keep them out of those sensitive areas. So where we do have, you know, instances of potential dam removal projects, we really do, as I said, we have to weigh those options. We really have to try to keep them, you know, at bay and out of those really sensitive habitats.
Chris, talk about sensitive, the Pinelands region, they get in there. But again, would the water be too acidic maybe? Again, like a natural, hey man, I don't want this neighborhood. I ain't going here.
Yeah, I mean, generally those areas of the Pinelands, you know, where we have our native Pinelands species, you know, some of our native sunfish species, you know, the very unique habitat, you know, of that low pH, it's not the most productive water, you know, even mm-hmm. when pickerel, you know, pickerel, which are our top, you know, game species, native game species within the Pinelands, you know, even that species doesn't grow very large, you know, within those, you know, those cranberry bogs right. and stuff. It's just because that low pH water, they're just not very productive. So, you know, I think a snakehead would be tolerant enough of the pH that they would survive. They may not grow as large as they would in other places, but yeah, we don't want to take our chances, and we want to do everything we can to keep them out of those areas.
Chris, let's rebound back to the original worries, which is still viable, about negatively impacting largemouth populations in, again, the Southwest Jersey, Delaware Basin area. Have there been, or your electroshocking netting and stuff, have you noticed any significant negative impacts with, again, their population? It's something has to give, no?
Right, absolutely. I mean, a water body only has a certain carrying capacity. You know, we can only have, a bucket only holds so much water, a bucket only holds, I like to use, you know, ping pong balls and tennis balls as like kind of an analogy. You know, you can only put so many in a bucket, right? Mm-hmm. So there can only be so many fish within that same bucket. So, you know, there's going to be consequences, you know, when we have a large 5-pound snakehead, that's going to replace something else in the long run. You know, we don't know if it's going to be largemouth bass. We don't know if it's going to be, you know, sunfish population, mm-hmm. you know, crappies, but at some place there's going to be a replacement, you know, of another species. So we continue to, you know, as you mentioned, and I've talked about in the past, we do a lot of electrofishing, monitoring, sampling. You know, one of the places that we look at quite frequently annually is the Salem Canal. Now, the Salem Canal has experienced a lot of habitat changes over the last 20 years that I've been electrofishing there. And we do see stretches of bank that were, you know, that we've always sampled. Traditionally, we have very defined sections that we, you know, electrofish. Mm-hmm. And we can see a transition going from less largemouth to more snakeheads within some of these areas. The habitat has changed. The population is still very good, you know, within the canal. I mean, an excellent, excellent bass population. Yep. Mm-hmm. But we do see, you know, a lot of snakeheads. That's, you know, when I get the call at work and, you know, at the office and, you know, asking where I can go to catch a snakehead, you know, that's the place that I definitely say, you know, it's got great access, very fishable water, you know, easy to get to the fish, easy to target those fish. That would be the place that I would send somebody, is the Salem Canal, if they want to catch a snakehead.
Well, Chris, let me backtrack a bit when I said the snakehead in the Millstone River. That mm-hmm. was, I'm looking across the river. I said, is that a snakehead? It could have been a bowfin. The guy said, I think it's a snakehead. It could have been a bowfin. Same shape. And I'll tell you exactly where it was. I said, Griggs, at my Blackwell's Mills. Right? I'm looking right, because we fish right across from there. So again, and now there's been flatheads. Caught there. So that's the first thing. Maybe it was a snake. They look so similar. Well, I just want to clarify that so it doesn't, you know, send an alarm. So I'm thinking, that's right. I said, that looks like a Bofa. And kid said, oh, kid, he's in his early 20s. No, dude, it looks like Snakehead. So I said, well, all right.
We'll definitely take. We have some other, you know, crews and stuff doing some work in that area, you know, with some, you know, dam removals and stuff. So, you know, definitely it'll be on alert to take a look in that area, see if we find any snakeheads.
Well, Chris, on the overall, so what can we do? What can we do with the snakeheads to encourage to catch them or maybe. All anglers, most anglers, are egotists. Said it may be a state record. There's a record classification for them. I know Maryland, they've done that with the flatheads or blues or whatever. Something to encourage, but listen, you're really not going to make that much of a rod and reel impact on them, but some sort of way to at least get some of them out.
You know, currently, we do not recognize them, you know, as a state record fish. The idea behind that is that if somebody's trying to get the recognition for catching a state record, you know, if a fish is just, you know, not quite big enough for that state record, you know, the idea is that the person would probably then release it back to grow larger to then try to catch it again, which defeats the whole purpose of our regulation. So that's right. Why we're not currently recognize them as a state record. We have a newly approved statewide aquatics invasive management plan that we just finished here in the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
It's federally approved. So as that management plan begins to be implemented over the next few years, we'll definitely revisit some of our regulations, you know, other neighboring states' regulations, and see if, you know, we're adaptive. And, you know, we'll see if, you know, if any regulation changes is warranted, you know, over the next few years as, you know, as the social aspect, you know, of fisheries management, you know, begins mm-hmm. to change.
And from this corner, listeners, catch them and eat them. They're fun to catch, and they're like I said, they're passable eating. So I've had worse.
Absolutely.
I've had better. So, Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Summertime, I know you guys are slammed with field work, on the water work. Thanks for taking the time to come on Rack and Fin. Listen, Northern Snakeheads, they are here to stay. Chris, you take care, man. Best of the family.
All right. Thank you.
See you, brother. Along on that segment. Be right back. A little bit of Cape May history coming up. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5. For complete contest rules, visit WPGTalkRadio.com. Bullet Points.
I'm Eben Brown. Are you old enough to remember cigarette vending machines and bowling alleys? They didn't look like the soda and candy vending machines. They had those little pull handles, and if you had put in the correct change, pulling that handle meant getting a pack of smokes. Now, those are long gone now because of public indoor smoking bans, and there was also little way of making sure underage kids with coins couldn't get a hand on cigarettes. Now, some grocery store locations in Alabama and Oklahoma have vending machines selling ammunition. And while you can't smoke ammo, there is still an age restriction in buying it, and that's why the machines, operated by the American Rounds Company, use high tech to check IDs and scan faces. The machines resemble ATM kiosks, and the ammo vending machines can be set to comply with all local laws and ordinances, so the company has plans for more installs. And those are your bullet points. I'm Eben Brown, Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 and the WPG Talk Radio app.
I've just been raving about spending some time down in Cape May County from Ocean City up top right over to Bridge Harbor Memorial all the way down to Sunset. Was that Sunset Place? I just love the Cape, all parts of it. But there's one place in particular I can't wait to get there, and I hate to leave. I just hang out, and I'm more of a historian. It was a great book. There was a two-part series. Joan Cunningham, I forget, George something or other was the other one. I can't find it. The History of Cape May County, going way back. It got to the whaling days, and you see, like, Nummy and all these names that I can see out of the land. I mean, Cape May is such a rich history in New Jersey. One place in particular, I believe it's going to be celebrating its 75th anniversary coming up. So to me, that's modern history. And it's an iconic place. The family has been there. We're going to get into the history now. It's Utch's Marina, 1121 Route 109. Schillinger's Landing in Cape May. It's right there on the left-hand side. You just go over the bridge, make that right, boom, back under. Stopped in there the other day wearing my Utch's tournament shirt from years ago and spoke with Ernie Utch III, just a fantastic guy, interesting man. The history of that part, that is Cape May, and the history of Utch's Marina, where it's become, it is a landmark. It is a mainstay in Cape May County, Lower Township. I have Ernie on the line right now. I just want to get into some of the history, people. You'll find it fascinating, especially on the fishing end. Some of the best fishermen, and not only along the South Jersey Shore, along the Jersey Shore, are there. Shout out to Captain Bob Cope, Fullhead Sport Fishing, and Captain Tommy Daffin on Fishing Fever. They are right there. Captain Steve Bent, he's now back up in Margate. He has Free Spirit there for years. This is the hub. This is the nerve center, to me, of the Cape May inland and mid-range fishery. Ernie's being very patient because he knows I'm a yapper. Ernie, thanks for waiting in on me. It was great to see you the other day, Ernie. I wanted to stay all day, but you started to get busy as usual. I noticed, Ernie, every slip there was taken, man. Congratulations on another. Looks like a winning summer, man. Go.
Yeah, it was. Every slip is taken, and people are still coming in and asking for more. And I don't have anything to help them with. I'm all filled up.
Yeah, Ernie, the only thing, those, you had a couple of empty transient slips, but again, you were getting calls, and I'm sure they're filled. But Ernie, I want to get into Utch's Marina from acorns grow mighty oaks, to use an old worn-out term. But it started, believe it or not, Ernie tells us, with his granddad, who owned a candy store in Philadelphia, to what is now one of the biggest marinas along the Jersey Shore. Ernie, can you just avail us with that history? I found it fascinating.
Yeah, I can. Grandpop came over from Germany in the big German immigration at the turn of the century, and he grounded himself in Philadelphia. He was a farmer when he came. He went to work for a Jewish man by the name of Linder, and Mr. Linder told him the basics of the candy business. And at the height of the Depression in the 1920s, money was tight. He went to Mr. Linder. He said, "Mr. Linder, you can't pay me. You're having a tough time. I'm going to open my own store." And he opened his candy store in his vestibule at his Philadelphia Roadhouse.
Wow.
And that's how we got started.
But, Ernie, from Philadelphia, a candy store, a candy stand in the vestibule, to what the marina is now. So where did it start? Did your granddad like to fish, or was he did he like boating? Was he a mariner? What's the dealio?
He loved farming and he loved fishing, and that's how he got down here to Cape May. He rented a place over on Yacht Avenue, which is in Cape May City, and he bought a little piece of land right where the canal is now. And he farmed that field and he sold his vegetables. And then he loved his fishing. He went fishing on a party boat every chance that he got.
And Ernie, Cape May was the hub. I mean, back then you had a thriving party boat and charter fishery going on down there, right? Weren't there a lot of boats?
Yeah, there were. There was an awful lot of fishing boats. Most of them are gone now, and they were all independently owned back in the day. Now the docks own most of the fishing boats, as they got these licenses and stuff. The docks bought everything up. So places like the Lobster House or like Lund's Fishery, they not only have the dock, they also own the fishing boats and the licenses as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's the growth of the business. That's just how it went.
So, Ernie, your granddad now, and now your dad was there. So it was slowly building. You had a slip for, tell us about, what was it, the Gertrude W. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was built in the city of Cape May by a man by the name of Ernest Farrow. He built that boat for my grandpop right after World War II. Grandpop had a house built during the war. My dad was serving the United States Army, so he landed in Normandy. But when he got home, then they had this party boat built. She was 45 to 50 feet long, and we kept it at Cape May Marina, which is now what they call South Jersey Marina.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Dad got together and decided it would be nice if they had their own place where they could tie their own boat behind their house, just like a lot of folks had at the time. Captain Emerson, Captain Harrington, Captain Russell, they all had houses on the creek, and they all had a party boat behind it. And that's what my grandpa and Dad wanted.
Uh-huh.
So they started to cut the place dredged because it was just vast green meadowland at the time, and they made a cut in there. And some of the guys at the marina said, you know, if you put in another slip, I'd like to bring my boat over here and be with you rather than be over here.
And there you go.
So, that's how we got started. We were going to build one slip, and the next thing you know, we started to build a whole bunch of them.
Join us on the Rack and Fin line this morning. Very special guest. Just a wonderful guy and a whole crew down there, Dawn in the office. Jonathan Klug, Freddie Klug, the late, great Freddie Klug, I will say. Just a wonderful guy himself. He used to run the tackle shop there. You have a great ship, sir. It is Ernie Utch III. So, okay, Ernie, so you're expanding now, right? Now, how many slips going? Obviously, there wasn't the environmental restrictions. For some are good, some are overdone, whatever. So your expansion was just a matter of coming up with the funds to purchase another tract of land, correct?
That's what it was. We bought this place just like a checkerboard, a little piece at a time, and then we just added it a little bit larger each time and put in a few more slips and a few more until you see what you have here today.
So, right. So, Ernie, so this all happened. When was Utch's not as we know it today because you're huge. Was it 1950, 51? When did that, here we are, we're established, and let's go from here. Was that 51?
1951 was the first year we managed to get open.
And how many, do you remember offhand how many boats were in the slips at that time?
I don't know, but in the mid-1950s, I have an old newspaper article that claimed that Utch's Marina had 120 slips, and I think that was approximately around 1957, 58, 59.
Mm-hmm.
We moved out of Philadelphia in 1958. My Uncle Charlie took over the candy business, and he moved into Oakland, New Jersey. And then we came down here full-time, and the marina was our work.
So, Ernie, that you point out a building to me across, from, listen, yeah, see, there, I mean, this is every man's marina. You have boats in there from 17 feet to 50 plus. Ernie, you said there was a building there. That was your house?
That was the house that my grandfather had built during the war.
Uh-huh.
And when they put the bridge in, we had to move it. So we tucked it over there in a corner by the Cape May Canal. And then probably 25 years ago, we took the whole thing apart and we repurposed it and put a little apartment upstairs and put a laundromat in and put a lounge in and put 8 private bathrooms.
Wow.
We used that for our facilities here. And it's all top notch. It's a beautiful place.
So, Ernie, now you have your slips. You're growing. Utch's Marina is growing. Now you need the equipment. You need dredges. You need backhoes, bulldozers. So this built up, again, over the years. So when you were, again, you're doing it now, but when was construction firing on all cylinders when you realized we can expand and we can expand big time? Was that in the early 60s or was that just a continuing progress?
It was continuing 60s, but from the late 1960s to about 1980, that's when we pushed real hard.
You made an interesting, if I can interrupt you, say, listen, he made an interesting point. He brought up the works. I remember the battles. My mom, her birthday is July 14th. Anyway, she was with the U.S. Attorney's Office with that Tox Island thing, and the word Army Corps of Engineers was a bad word. This is back in the 60s. Ernie, Army Corps of Engineers, so from your end, they were cooperative? They helped? What was the dealio?
Those guys were great help. My dad would tell me he would go up to see the Army Corps and they would sit down with him, and his name was Ernie, too, and say, Ernie, why don't you do this and this? Because this is going to be hard to do, but we can get this approved for you pretty quick and this approved for you pretty quick. And then he redesigned his approach to things, and he did things that way. That's the way the Army Corps was in those days. But, I still do a lot of business with them. They come here even now, and they bring their big dredges, and they tie up on the end of the dock because they need a place to tie them.
Uh-huh.
And I see those folks several times throughout the summer, and they continue to be, in my book anyway, a bunch of good guys.
Well, that's good. That's good here. Ernie, now we're speaking with Ernie Utch III, Utch's Marina in Cape May, Lower Township, right there in Cape May, a beautiful facility. Sorry, people, they're full. They're full. Now, Ernie, you're there year-round, correct? You're not a snowbird. You're not a snowbird. You have staff on call year-round, correct?
Yes, we keep a service crew here year-round. In the summertime, we run the marina business just like you'd imagine it in a storybook. But in the wintertime, Then the coveralls come on, and then we get out and we start to work on the docks. And we have our piling rig, which we built here, and we have our own dredge, which we bought, and we have our own equipment, and we do all those things when the people aren't here.
I saw you had a couple of travel lifts there too. Correct?
Yes.
Man, yeah.
One's a 55-ton, one's a 25-ton.
And Ernie, I noticed too, the staff, you have a lean, mean, tight machine there. I mean, it is seamless. I mean, everyone knows their place, whatever. So it's just firing on all cylinders, it seems.
Yeah, they don't need a lot of direction, and most of the people that are here have been here for quite some time. Just like the reference to Freddie Club's grandson, he's 20 or 21 years old now. He started hanging around here working when he was 14.
Wow.
And he knows what the hell he's doing. He's
yeah. Ern, I took a look in your parts in your ship store. That thing is, any boater, any guy going in, I don't care if he has a little Mako or even a post, a 42 post from years ago. You have what it takes. You have everything there.
I got stuff in here that nobody has because we take these old boats apart and then we clean it up and put it on the shelf. And I've got some parts that you just can't find any place.
Ernie, I want to ask you this. We're up against a hard break. You're hanging in for another segment. You can't escape me, Yutch. You can't escape me. But, Ernie, listen, plans for growth, I mean, can you, are you, for lack of a better term, are you maxed out?
No, I could build it bigger, but the age, but with my age now, we're not going to make it any bigger. We're happy where we are. We got to keep it the size we can manage it.
And Ernie, in the interim, I've spoke with many people who've stayed at your place, have had slips here for the years, and they wouldn't still be there if it weren't for the service, the facility, the cleanliness, and what the whole area has to offer. Listen, you're a 2-minute walk into downtown Cape May. Ernie, everything's there.
Yeah, everything's here. We're right next door to the Lobster House, and it doesn't get any better than that.
Listen, we're up against a hard break with Ernie Yutch. We'll be right back. Grab that cup. Grab that Rebel. Some Cape May, Lower Township, Cape May history. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Fox News. I'm Deborah Valentine. A major super PAC threatening to withhold tens of millions of dollars unless President Biden drops out of the race for another term due to cognitive concerns. Fox's Matt Finn.
The New York Times reports the frozen money was previously pledged to the largest super PAC supporting Biden called Future Forward. The $90 million pledges include a few individual $10 million contributions. The names of the donors who are backing out is being kept private.
President Biden dismissing calls to exit his campaign, taking a swipe at former President Trump while campaigning in Detroit.
I'm the nominee of the Democratic Party, the only Democrat or Republican who has beaten Donald Trump ever. And I'm going to beat him again.
Former President Trump campaigns in Butler, Pennsylvania today. That ahead of Monday's opening of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. For today, more clouds and sun, very humid with a couple of showers and a thunderstorm with a high of 84. For tonight, partly cloudy skies and humid, low 71. Tomorrow, partly sunny and warmer with a high of 93. For tomorrow night, clear to partly cloudy skies and humid, low 72. On Monday, mostly sunny and hot with a high of 98. I'm AccuWeather's Caitlin Lawrence on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go. Look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of July 13th and 14th. Very special guest on the line. Historic family, historic landmark, iconic, one of the nicest marinas on the Jersey Shore, man. I'm talking from Liberty Island State Park down to the bottom of Cape May, where Utch's Marina is. It's Ernie Yutch III. Well, Ernie, as we sat there talking, I noticed a lot of, you had a fair share, not as many as I remember though, from a couple of years ago. You had your fair share of fishing boats. Captain Bob Cope, he's already had a slip. Fishing Fever was still there. Captain Tommy Daffin, but I'm sure he was gone after I left. But Ernie, it seems now there's more pleasure boating, more cruising, like dock and dine, or coming in from another port, say in Ocean City, Maryland, coming to your place or whatever. Have you noticed a subtle switch in this, in the progression of, for lack of a better term, the boating industry?
Oh, yeah. It's changed dramatically over the years. You go back in the 1950s, in the early 1960s, we had 50-some party boats and charter boats here, and a smattering of small recreational boats, and everybody fished. And as the design of the boats changed, then the marina had to change too. So instead of just real rudimentary bathrooms that were okay for the guys, we had to start to provide amenities because now the ladies were coming.
Mm-hmm.
And the designs of the boats changed. So they were here all the time. All the tugboat aunties were gone, and we were getting real girls here all of a sudden. Instead of the rough and tumble kind of girls. And the whole thing changed. And that's been an evolutionary process my entire life. Now I'd say it's more family boating and less fishing. But mm-hmm. back in the day, it was almost all fishing and very little family boating. And it's a big transition. Like flipping the coin, heads or tails.
Yeah. So, Ernie, the transition began, would you say, the late 80s, early 90s? 2000, when?
I'd say it started in the late 60s.
Late 60s?
In the late 60s, you started to see a change. And they had all these small boat companies, and New Jersey had a big gang of boat companies, which are almost all gone now. Viking is one of the few that was left.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go back to Silverton, Richardson, Ulrichsen, Lures,
right.
On and on and on. And they're almost all gone now.
Oh, yeah. So, again, the Lures, that was a rampage. I remember those boats. And Post, those were fishing machines, correct?
Yeah, and the late Post, too. In later years, when Mr. Post retired, he opened a Post dealership down in Florida. And my younger sister, she went to work for him because she lives down there. And she still does. She worked for Mr. Post.
Mm-hmm. So, Ernie, the clientele you're getting now, you have a lot of repeat customers for generations, I'm sure. So you're seeing the switch now. How is that, and the boats coming in? The newer boats, they're getting bigger, they're getting smaller. The economy itself, Ernie, what are they spending in the tackle shop, in the ship store? What are you seeing out there? The price of fuel. Again, changes, are you constantly, it's basically like a juggling act?
Yeah, it is. I see people now, when they come in, especially this particular year, the economy's tough. I mean, it looks good on the outside, but as soon as you dig a little deeper, everything that they're doing this season is measured. So they come in and they check the price. Or when they come to the fuel box, it's not fill it up. Ernie, cut me off for $200 worth.
Wow.
Cut me off for $100 worth. And that's the way it is. But they haven't given up their boating. They're still here. They're still enjoying it.
Yeah.
They come down here on Friday. They stay for the weekend. They go back on Sunday. The boats serve as, in large part, probably half the marina. That's their weekend retreat. They come down here and they live on the boat for Friday night, Saturday
sure.
night, and maybe even Sunday night, and head out real early Monday morning. And then they go back to Cherry Hill or Philadelphia or Bucks County or Montgomery County, wherever they're from. But the greater Philadelphia area, that whole big South Jersey circle, that's the basis where we draw all our customers from, all the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't mind driving a couple of hours. And they all love it here because Cape May has so much to offer.
Ernie, a couple hours, not for anything, brother, but, man, trying to get into Cape May from wherever, sometimes on a Friday, that's a day endeavor. Most people try to leave Thursday night. It's packed.
That's why when you get here in Skellinger's Landing between the bridges on this island, you ride a bicycle into Cape May. It's only a mile and a half to the center of town, and you're there.
Ernie, now you're
Cape May boasts 100 restaurants.
Yeah, but see, to me, Mr. Utch, I would want just the atmosphere there, being on the water. I would want to cook. Going out's nice. Hey, don't get me wrong. Whatever. But Ernie, just you have picnic facilities there. You have grills cooking out on the boat. That's why you go there, to escape that waiting. And my lovely Dee Marie, she's the same way, to a degree. Ernie, no way am I waiting 45 minutes to an hour to give somebody my money. I don't care how good the lobster is. You know what I'm saying? But Ernie, your transients now, we spoke to people, again, I mentioned Ocean City, Maryland. They're coming in from Virginia. You get from up North Jersey. The Cape draws boaters from all over.
All over. You can't believe. I've had people here from South Africa.
Wait, what?
I've had people that left South Africa because of the turmoil have actually come here in their boat. And I get this group called the American Great Leap Association. These people take a year off from their professions, and they get in their boat, and they traverse the whole East Coast from wherever they're starting, the Carolinas, the Georgia, Chesapeake Bay, and head up the East Coast and into the Great Lakes. And they go all through the Great Lakes till they get into Lake Michigan. And then there's a route that puts them into the Ohio River. And then they come all the way down the Ohio River.
Uh-huh.
And they have several options to go down there. They have Mississippi, the John Bigby Water Lake. So I end up in the Gulf of Mexico, completely down the west coast of Florida, to the Okeechobee Canal, which cuts from the Gulf of Mexico into the Atlantic Ocean.
Yep,
and then all the way back up the East Coast. And they just stop and visit and enjoy themselves. And it's a whole year's trip. Some people do it more than once. And that's a big part of our transient business. These people are here from the beginning of May, usually when it starts, because they have to wait for the canals to get open before they can travel. And that'll hang on until the end of July. And by that point, then they're all past us, and they're up in the lakes. They've made the turn, and they're headed back down toward the Gulf of Mexico. But there's more people doing that than you can imagine.
That's fascinating. Ernie, I saw that map in your office there in the store. Listen, that's incredible. Again, Cape May up all the way up to the St. Lawrence Seaway, down into the Great Lakes, all the way over to Lake Michigan, then down through. Ernie, how do they pick Utches as like one of the stopping points? Was it word of mouth? What was it?
A big part of it is word of mouth, and then they have sponsorships. And we picked up on that probably 25 years ago, that was a real good source of getting new customers. And it's just been a good relationship for all those years.
Ernie, that I just found that absolutely fascinating. Let's imagine that, taking a whole year. And Ernie, you explained many of the clientele worked hard. They're in their early 50s, mid-50s. They have the computers on board, whatever, their laptops. And they're just enjoying the fruits of their labors. That's pretty interesting as all get out, man.
That's exactly what they're doing. All of those people, whoever they are people of accomplishment, every single one of them, whether it's a big trawler or smaller trawler, they go from, I see big boats 50 feet, 60 feet actually doing this, but I see boats as little as 25
feet. I was just going to ask you that, Ernie. Did you ever sit back and say, oh, that guy's taking a chance there, man? Going on one of these things in a small boat?
They build these small boats called a Ranger tugboat, and they're 25 and 27 feet. And they pack all this stuff in, just like they do a camper, a recreational vehicle, and it's enough to get them going. And then off they go, and they're all slow boats. They all make about 6, 7, 8, 9 miles an hour. That's all they do. And they just wander their way through, and they enjoy the trip the whole time.
That's my speaker. Speaking with Ernie Utch III, Utch's Marina, 1121 Route 109, Skellinger's Landing in Cape May, over the bridge. I think that's third Avenue, whatever it is there. Make that right, go right back around, and on the left, go in. It's a great place. You're arriving by boat, you have to call ahead, Ernie, correct, for the few transient slips. Ernie, I can't imagine you having a transient slip open more than a day before people, pew, and they pull.
Yeah, I keep about 25 plus of them, and they're usually all booked. And it works the same way as a motel does. You call and you make a reservation.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same way.
Ernie, I have to ask you this. We're up against a hard break, closing it out. We're going to have you again on in the fall. So we're going to do a nice big segment, Boating and Fishing the Cape in the Fall, September through October. Beautiful time. Ernie, your take on the overall. We started to talk business a little bit, then you had to get going. Your phone was going off. Your take, Ernie, right now, Utch's Marina, very successful. You're saying it's a good year. Thank God. Fingers crossed, toes crossed, a whole bit. What are you seeing in the future? You had mentioned it hinges on the election in November. Give us your take.
It hinges on the election and the economy. We have to curtail this inflationary spiral. It's bad. and people are beginning to feel that. I feel very confident that the slips are not going to be a problem, because Cape May, fortunately, this South Jersey area is a place where all the people are running to, and you can see it in the housing market. The prices have just skyrocketed. People want to be here. But how they spend and what they spend, let's wait and see. Let's see what happens between here and November, and then after November, let's wait and see what the House of Representatives, the United States Senate, and the president does, whoever the president might be.
Yeah, Ernie, I noticed...
I'm going to tell a story.
I think I worked about four boat shows this past winter. And I noticed from years prior, again, there were no boats around, whatever, was crazy. It was coming back that people were buying, but not with the verve and excitement. It was, again, ooh, they were, okay, I'm just throwing this out there. I want that Cape Horn. I want that Cape Horn, man. No matter what, and loaded up, I want that Cape Horn too. Cape Horn has a great boat, but they're looking for alternatives. So they were spending, or they were signing on a dotted line, you know, pulling a trigger, so to speak. But as you said, it's more, as they're saying, they're measuring. It was a more cautionary purchase than I had seen back in the heyday.
That's exactly what I see here. And I see it with everything that we do around here. Fortunately, it's all been good.
Mm-hmm.
It really has. I'm not saying that just because you're on the other end of the line. But we'll have to wait and see.
Ernie, one last thing before we go. Again, congratulations. Again, 75th anniversary coming up, correct?
Yes.
And you're doing it the right way.
2026.
You're doing it the right way. If you've survived, and not only survived, let's just through and thrive. Ernie, one last thing. You know me, I'm a sandbagger.
Yeah.
Whether the inflation economy, you had mentioned other two times when you saw inflation and stuff bad. When were those?
Jimmy Carter,
yep.
Arab oil embargo and the 52 hostages, and then George H.W. Bush. With the advent of that luxury tax and everything else, and that really jug things down.
Oof.
And we were able to get by both of them. And here we are again, and we have to wait and see. Too soon to tell.
Because, Ernie, marinas, they pop up, and then they disappear, like dandelions. I mean, they're taken over or whatever, purchase, and then next thing you know, there's condo or townhouse units on there. Well, Ernie Utch, listen, it's a great piece of Lower Township Cape May history. Utch's Marina, iconic place, beautiful place. A lot of stuff going on there. Stop in there sometime. Come in on a boat, get a slip. It's just, Ernie, I even asked Dawn, hey, Dawn, can you rent me a tent site? I like to hang out here because I don't think my little Coleman crawdaddy would would qualify, Ernie, but get me a tent on one of those properties in the back, man. I would love it.
Come on down and pitch it. It'll be okay.
Ernie, give that phone number, please.
609-884-2051.
Utch's Marina, 1121 Route 109, Skellinger's Landing in Cape May. Ernie, we'll see you. I'll be down that way midweek next week. Hey, man, let's go to lunch or something, or do some... Well, you never get a chance to fish, Ernie. You're too busy. Listen, this guy's right. He's timeless. And when he takes those sunglasses off, those blue eyes bore right into your soul. So you don't BS this guy, man. He's an Utch. Ernie, you take care, man. We'll see you soon.
All right. It was great talking with you.
See you, brother.
Yeah.
I just love it down there. I just love the Cape. And listen, I love it all. Admires, but you love it all. Go into the Barrens. Get there along Delaware Bay. It's nice. That's as close to the bio as you're going to get. Beautiful place there. Something about more in the spring, fall, summer is crazy. We know that. It's crazy. But... what it survives, next year is going to be 26 or 75 years. Must be doing something right. Check it out. Utch's Marina. What a great place. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
That'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Get out there and enjoy. Okay, weather's going to be thunderstorms here and there. Stay hydrated. It's hot. It's nasty. This is New Orleans. This is coquetry weather. Yeah, coquetry way down there on the bayou. God bless America. God bless the troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Again, happy birthday, Mom. Sure do miss you. Thanks for getting me fishing when I was just a little kid. See you next week.